You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK. The FWA podcast from William Hill. Listen to the podcast at williamhill.com/podcast.
Hello everyone, a warm welcome to the latest edition of the FWA podcast. As always, it's a pleasure to be joined by one of the top football journalists in the land on the line right now, and it's the Daily Mirror's Manchester football correspondent, David McDonnell, who joins us on this Friday morning. First of all, good morning, David.
Morning.
How are you, sir?
I'm very well, and yourself?
I'm very well, thank you. I'm looking forward to this weekend. We always spin through the televised matches in the Premier League on this podcast, and we've got some absolute crackers this weekend, David.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the top four going head-to-head. It's certainly could be a pivotal weekend in the title race. Certainly points are going to be won and lost. It could be a definitive weekend in the season, definitely.
We start with the game Saturday lunchtime, and this is a 12:45 kickoff. Sunderland versus Manchester United. Sunderland 15-4, the draw 12-5, and Manchester United in the betting at 4-5. David, I know for the Daily Mirror you work in Manchester as their football correspondent. Manchester United, the talk of the town at the moment, with the rumours that Jose Mourinho might be there next season, start of next season, albeit these rumours might have been started by Jose Mourinho as well.
Yeah, well, certainly there is a lot of noise around Manchester United and Louis van Gaal at the moment, and not without reason or substance. They have to be planning, obviously, for next season. They have to be sounding out potential candidates if, as looks likely, United don't make the Champions League. You know, they're 6 points off the Champions League places. They've still got some important games to come up in terms of their rivals for that. So it's looking unlikely that they will make that top four. I think, by my calculations, they've got to win about 10 of their last 13 games to get to that sort of 70-point mark, which is the average points total of the team finishing fourth in the Premier League. So there's nothing to indicate that United can string that kind of run together between now and the end of the season. So, Van Gaal, as much as he doesn't like it, is under scrutiny, and his position has been called into question. That makes for an interesting trip up to Sunderland for them tomorrow. Lunchtime kickoff. They've got a decent record there, and as we all know, they came close to beating Chelsea last weekend. The very, very late goal from Costa to deny them the win there. So my money would be on United. They have been playing with a bit more freedom, certainly in recent weeks. But obviously Sunderland, despite their position, they're picking up points. They had a great comeback at last weekend at Liverpool to draw 2-2. So it certainly will be a battle for United, but I would expect them to come through.
Manchester United 4-5 to win the game. If Louis van Gaal doesn't make it into that top four with Manchester United, do you think he will definitely leave in the summer?
I do, yeah. We carried a story in the Daily Mirror a few weeks ago suggesting that he could actually call time himself on it, that he could walk away. And I think that scenario would suit both parties. It would suit United because they're desperate to get a manager in who's able to go head-to-head with Pep Guardiola, of course, who's coming in at Manchester City. Now, despite United saying that they won't be dictated by what happens anywhere else and that they have their own plans, they have to. You can't exist in a vacuum, and you can't not respond to what's happened or what's going to happen at Manchester City next season. So they need a manager who's capable of going head-to-head and toe-to-toe with Guardiola. So I do think, as much as people say, it depends if he finishes top four, I think it's a bit of a fait accompli. I think that Louis van Gaal won't be there next season. I think Jose Mourinho will be. And I think it's going to be fascinating to see how Guardiola and Mourinho renew their rivalry that was such a fascinating rivalry in Spain, how they recreate that here in the Premier League.
It does seem to be a little bit of a U-turn for Manchester United, David. Tell me if I'm wrong, but Jose Mourinho has been on the lips of everyone, and when David Moyes left, they thought that Mourinho was coming in, but Manchester United have always kind of stepped back from that notion that Mourinho was the man to lead this club forward.
That's very true. That's absolutely the case. There was opposition to Jose Mourinho when Sir Alex Ferguson stepped down 3 years ago. chiefly Bobby Charlton. So Bobby Charlton, you know, was said to not be entirely comfortable with Mourinho's abrasive style, and also Mourinho, let's be honest, doesn't play the kind of cavalier attacking football that is associated with Manchester United. You know, he's more of a pragmatic coach, but he gets results. And I think the interesting thing from Manchester United's perspective is that they've kind of been forced into a they've been forced into a corner really by Manchester City, because suddenly City have now got the coach that everybody wants. They've got arguably the best coach in the world in Guardiola coming in. They've got the infrastructure there. They've got the finance there to really dominate for years to come. So United kind of had themselves sort of, you know, pushed into this, I think. And yeah, you can see it as an abandonment of their principles and everything they stand for. But the one thing Mourinho will guarantee you is trophies and success. He's done that everywhere he's managed. Okay, Chelsea this season, it didn't go according to plan. But I think for the short term, I think United, you know, feel they have to do something to react to Manchester City and to react to their own slump. You know, this is looking like a third season without a trophy since Alex retired.
Yeah.
And they cannot allow that to go on. So I think they need to get a coach in who can win trophies. And of course, we all know that the days of Sir Alex Ferguson and these, you know, 26 years and all that kind of legacy is gone now. So I think it's, you have to be more pragmatic in terms of managers, and you know, as we all know, in the modern game, they last 2, 3 years, 4 years, and then there's a kind of cycle. So I think United, possibly it's a change of tack for them, but I think one that they have to really embrace.
Manchester United 4-5 to win at the Stadium of Light this weekend. Let's move on to Chelsea. Chelsea versus Newcastle, 5:30 on Saturday evening. Chelsea 4-9. To win this game, David. The draw is 100-30, and Newcastle in the market at 6-1. Chelsea have got an incredible record under Gus Hiddink. He's only lost one of his 21 matches as a Premier League manager. The concern with Chelsea is that without Kurt Zouma now, and he has been pretty influential for them this season, he's the four games that he's missed, they've drawn two and lost two, and that doesn't bode well for Gary Cahill, if you're thinking about his maybe pretensions to come into the European squad in the summer. It's been kind of a negative when he's played this season.
Yeah, it's a strange one, isn't it? I mean, Cahill was always seen as the kind of first choice partner to John Terry, and that title winning season last season, you know, that was the case. But he's kind of regressed, and obviously Zouma has come in and taken his place, and now Cahill's got that chance again. You know, it'll be interesting to see how that dynamic works with him and Terry, because you know, they were such a formidable partnership. It's certainly, you know, they have improved under Gus Hiddink. He's come in and steadied the ship. But I think they've drawn, I think it's six of the last eight they've drawn, I think. So they've become a kind of draw specialist. And I think they're even behind Manchester United in terms of the kind of recent form book. So it is a test for Chelsea. You know, that have they won, you know, each of the four matches they've drawn recently? I think their Champions League hopes would have been given a huge boost. But as it stands, you know, they keep on drawing matches, and they do find themselves in kind of no man's land. You know, they're unlikely to get into the Champions League places now with 13 games to go. And it's a sort of curious season with Chelsea in that they don't really have a great deal to play for domestically. Certainly in the league. So, yeah, that's an interesting game, and I think one that Chelsea will be looking to win just to kind of, you know, push themselves up the table.
As for Newcastle, David, Steve McClaren, there was a lot of expectation when Steve McClaren came into the club. It's not quite worked out as he maybe anticipated, but they can still survive this season, and that's the main aim now. I just wondered how you thought his spell as manager had materialised.
Yeah, it's a difficult one. I mean, it's as you say, Dave. A lot was expected of Steve McClaren when he came in, and you know they have spent obviously in the January transfer window. I think they were the biggest spenders certainly in the Premier League. So you know they can't be accused certainly, you know, recently of not sort of spending enough to kind of get themselves out of trouble. But they do find themselves one point above the relegation zone, and that's a real concern for them, because of course survival, as we all know, in the Premier League is paramount, you know, for prestige, but ultimately for the financial package, because obviously with the TV money, you know, next season, you know, clubs are desperate to stay in the Premier League. So it really is a battle for survival at the moment. I mean, you know, we all look at the table, you think that obviously Villa are doomed, but then you've got, you know, the two northeast sides and Norwich and Swansea have been dragged into it, as have Bournemouth. So it's going to be a fascinating battle to see how Newcastle fare. But I mean, you know, it was often said of them that they were too big to go down, and of course, you know, they went down a few years ago under Alan Shearer. So really, it's going to be a tense last few weeks of the season for Newcastle, certainly.
What's your gut feeling? Do you think they'll survive?
I think so. I think they've got enough quality. You know, I mean, Mitrovic is starting to score goals. You know, he's a decent signing. They've certainly got enough quality in that side. I think Shelby was a very good signing for them as well. So I think there is quality there. It's just at this stage of the season about trying to put that consistency together. I do think that, you know, Norwich, are in sort of free fall. I think they've lost the last six, I think. So they're the side that have been kind of dragged down into it. I don't suspect that they'll get out. So it's obviously one from Sunderland, Newcastle, Swansea and Bournemouth. I just think Newcastle will have enough quality in that squad to survive. And it's obviously, you know, going to be tense, but I think they'll just about do it.
Chelsea to win here, though, comprehensively?
I think so, yeah, I think so. I mean, Chelsea are due a win. As we said, you know, they are the draw specialists at the moment, but, you know, Costa's coming back to form and scoring, which is ominous for Newcastle. I just feel that Chelsea, again, with the quality in that squad and the quality in that side, they are due a win.
Chelsea 4-9 to win that game. On to Sunday now, when we start at midday with a belt of Arsenal versus Leicester. Arsenal in the market at 3-4 here with William Hill. The draw 11-4. Leicester 7-2. Leicester, of course, went to Manchester City and won at the Etihad. That was at 5-1 they were here with William Hill last week. And I've been saying for months and months and months, the wheels are bound to fall off sooner or later. But they haven't, David. They just keep churning out results. And even when they went through their sticky patch about a month ago, they've come out smelling of roses now, and they're looking superb again.
Yeah, it's an absolutely remarkable story. I think it's so refreshing and, you know, liberating for the Premier League to have Leicester up there and you know, still be there. You know, they've got a 5-point lead. I mean, even if they lose to Arsenal, they're going to have a 2-point lead. My only note of caution is that people are now starting to talk about, can they do it? You know, there's still a third of the season left. There's 13 games to go. So
yeah.
we're not on the home straight, as it were. We're not four, five, six games to go. When I think this talk, you know, of can they do it would be more, you know, more relevant. Can they do it? Of course they can. They've got no European fixtures, no cup fixtures. You know, they have a clear calendar, as it were, between now and the end of the season. You know, unlike Arsenal, unlike Manchester City, who are obviously, you know, going on four fronts trying to get the quadruple. You know, Tottenham have got obviously other commitments as well. So yes, they have the path and the route to do it. Will they do it? I don't think so. I think, you know, ultimately, I think the enormity of what they could achieve and what they can achieve and will catch up with them eventually. And I just think the other teams around them, the other squads, have got the know-how, the experience, and the strength and depth to last the distance. But look, it could happen. I mean, as you said, Dave, we've all been saying, you know, the wheels are going to come off soon, and you know, the fairy tale will end. But it hasn't. And I think the way they play as well. I mean, as I say, I was at the Etihad last Saturday when they beat City 3-1, and it was just so refreshing to see the way they play. They play with such joy and passion and exuberance. And you know, in a Premier League that's been a closed shop for so many years with the big four of, you know, United, Chelsea, Arsenal, Liverpool, and of course now City have kind of replaced, you know, Liverpool as the big four. It's so refreshing to see a side with Leicester who have spent, I think, what, 20 odd million, I think that 21 million that starting lineup cost. It's wonderful to see, and I think it's you know, it's a great story. But ultimately, I hate to be a killjoy, but I just feel that they will fall short. But interestingly, as we said about Manchester United at the outset, I think ultimately Leicester will probably end up denying Manchester United that Champions League spot because, or whoever obviously, you know, gets involved in that battle for fourth, because you can't see Leicester falling to such an extent that they drop out of the top four. So it's going to be wonderful to see them in the Champions League next season, because I think that's the least they deserve after such a fantastic season.
No, absolutely, I agree. And they've named an unchanged starting 11 in their last five Premier League games. It's not only the quality of the likes of Riyad Mahrez, Jamie Vardy, and also the player that's really impressed me, N'Golo Kanté, throughout the course of the season. Not just their quality, it's that continuity that's helped Leicester.
Absolutely, and that stat makes a mockery of all the top clubs saying, well, we have to rotate and we have to rest players and we have to do all these kind of things. If you get a winning formula, you get a team that plays together, understands each other, and obviously stays injury free, which has obviously been a key factor for Leicester. Then you don't have to rotate, you don't have to change things around, and it's refreshing to see certainly Leicester the way they play, and also some unsung heroes, as you say, Kante, and also Danny Drinkwater, former United graduate coming through. I mean, he's one of the unsung heroes. I thought he was incredible at Manchester City last weekend. Plays with such energy and purpose, and while the likes of Mahrez and Vardy are grabbing all the headlines, he's kind of the kind of fulcrum of the team, just doing the unsung hero work in midfield there. And his pace and energy, have been a feature of Leicester's rise this season. So yeah, a fantastic story, and one certainly that will hopefully, will almost certainly end with them in the Champions League places. But I think they may fall short of the ultimate prize.
As for Arsenal, David, they failed to score in their last two Premier League games at the Emirates against both Chelsea and Southampton. All the fans, or not all the fans, but a number of the fans sometimes question whether Arsene Wenger is active enough in the transfer market, and his lack of activity might come under scrutiny again. Not invested in a striker in the transfer window. Could that prove costly come the end of the season?
I think so. I mean, the time to strike is obviously, when you're in a position where you can go for the title. And I think that criticism, is valid of Arsene Wenger. I don't think Olivier Giroud is the answer. We've seen Walcott play out there as a striker. Ozil obviously come to the fore in terms of assists. He scored, obviously, at the weekend. But I just feel that they're lacking that goal scorer, that out-and-out 20-goal-a-season striker, who teams need to win the title. And I think whether it's obstinance on the part of Wenger, or a reluctance to go in because he doesn't feel there's any value there, whatever the reason, you have to go out there and you have to strengthen when you're in a position to win the title. Everyone was saying before Leicester emerged that this was Arsenal's golden opportunity to win the title. They've not won, I think, since 2004. It's a long wait for Arsenal fans. And they seem to have assembled a squad that's capable of doing so. But again, you need to have that out-and-out goal scorer. You need to have someone capable of hauling over the line. And I don't think in Giroud they've got that. And I think, putting Walcott up there or playing, they're reliant on creative players, wide players and flair players to kind of score the goals. And really, they need an out-and-out poacher. The kind of fox in the box to score the goals. And as I say, I don't think Giroud is that player. And I think they may well come to rue the fact that they didn't strengthen last month.
What's the prediction for this game at the Emirates then? Arsenal 3-4, the draw 11-4, Leicester 7-2.
Well, I mean, you wouldn't back against Leicester. I think as we all thought that City would assert their superiority last weekend, and of course, we all know how that turned out. It's a tough one to call. My heart says Leicester, but my head says Arsenal, so I'm going to go for an Arsenal win.
3-4, Arsenal to win that game. Sandwiched in between, we've got the top four clubs in action on Sunday as far as the league is concerned. Sandwiched in between, Aston Villa versus Liverpool at 2:05. I suppose, David, if you don't want to watch football constantly for 6 hours, you'll go out for Sunday lunch at this point, won't you?
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah, dart off to the pub or something.
Yeah, right? Definitely.
Pub without a TV, yeah.
Aston Villa 17-5 to win the game. The draw 12-5. Liverpool are 17-20. Liverpool always seem to be overrated by our odds compilers, and they're odds on to win at Aston Villa. You mentioned that game briefly earlier, the game against Sunderland at Anfield last Saturday, where they were 2-0 up going into the last 10 minutes and drew 2-2. A lot of people citing that perhaps the walkout after 77 minutes had an effect on that result. That seems seems a little bit childish to me. I think the players should be able to concentrate, even if there is an inverted commas, a mass walkout at that point.
Yeah, I think it's a bit of a cop out to blame the draw on the walkout from fans. I mean, it certainly didn't help. But as you say, players with the kind of experience that Liverpool have got, or any Premier League team really, if you 2-0 up with 13 minutes to go or 15 minutes to go, you should really see out the game. I think the interesting thing, Liverpool, I think it's 5 games now without a win. And you know, Jurgen Klopp's arrival at Anfield was, you know, heralded as this, you know, great visionary and this coach that would drag them, you know, back from, you know, back to the top. And it's not really worked out that way. Now, I know he's had injury to contend with and you know, there are other issues, and obviously it's not his squad, and he's not really been able to sort of invest as such yet. But, you know, 5 games without a win, they are regressing. You know, it does seem a long, long time ago since that euphoria of that 5-4 win at Norwich, you know, which was such probably the game of the season so far in the Premier League. I just feel that he will take time, and it'll certainly take another transfer window or two for him to really get the squad he wants and get the players he wants and get his philosophy across and the way he plays. And we know that at Dortmund he played a really high-tempo, high-pressing game. And that's certainly been a feature of Liverpool, but it's not manifested itself in results. And, of course, they went out of the FA Cup to West Ham in midweek. So this is a real test for them.
Do you think they'll throw a lot of money at it in the summer, Liverpool? Do you expect Jurgen Klopp to be given free rein there?
Well, I think they have to. I mean, we talk about, you know, money being the kind of the be all and end all in the Premier League, and you have to spend big. But look at Leicester, and we go back to that, you know, 21 million, 22 million spent on that starting lineup. Now, obviously, they haven't got over the line yet, and as we say, there's a third of the season left. But that just goes to show that you don't need to spend vast, vast sums in order to find a winning formula. Now, Manchester United have spent, I think, in the region of 300 million since Alex Ferguson retired. And they're kind of further away from the title and further away from the top four than ever before. So money isn't the kind of the be all and end all. But I have to invest in players, and you have to invest in the squad. And I don't think Liverpool at the moment have got the players to do that. You know, there's so many deficiencies in that squad, so many areas in which they need to strengthen. You know, that they've not been helped by the fact that Daniel Sturridge is perpetually injured and not available. You know, they've lost two key players in recent seasons in Suarez and Sterling. So, you know, they have to reinvest that money, and they have to reinvest it wisely. I don't think Benteke is the answer at 30 million. You know, I don't think he's a Jurgen Klopp type player.
We finished the weekend with Manchester City versus Tottenham at the Etihad. This is 4:15 Sunday evening. Manchester City 21-20 to win the game, the draw 12-5, and Tottenham in the market at 13-5. Manchester City have won the last 5 at the Etihad against Spurs. There's something a little bit unsettling about the way this Manchester City side are performing at the moment, and most of the nervous energy comes from that defence. Without Vincent Kompany, they look decidedly shaky at the back.
Yeah, I mean, he's a massive, massive loss for Manchester City. I think he's played, is it 9 minutes since Boxing Day when he came on against Sunderland? He's a huge loss. Just in terms of the calmness, the authority, the experience. I don't know off the top of my head what their clean sheet, you know, ratio is without, but, you know, with him or without him, but it's extraordinary. It's a real marked difference in terms of their defending. You know, Di Michaelis is so slow. He's not the answer. We saw that. You know, he was tormented by Vardy and Mahrez last weekend. Otamendi had a good start, in fairness, but he's regressed. Zabaleta, you know, looks like, you know, the years of playing at right back and bombing up and down have caught up with him. And a left back, Kolarov, looks a bit of a spent force. And so really, they are creaking at the back, and teams are exploiting that. Teams, you know, have worked out that if you can hit Manchester City on the break with pace, then they're vulnerable, as Leicester showed. So I think Tottenham will be looking to do that. Obviously, they beat City 4-1 at White Hart Lane earlier this season. You know, I mean, Manuel Pellegrini complains that a couple of the goals there were offside. But it's going to be a fascinating encounter. I think Sergio Aguero has got, I think, 10 goals against Tottenham. So he likes playing against them. So that's going to be interesting to see how he fares. And again, we talk about Liverpool needing a reaction. You know, Manchester City need a huge reaction from their players in front of their own fans again after the defeat to Leicester. We all talk about must-win games in our profession, but this is a must-win game for Manchester City. They're 6 points behind Leicester. You know, irrespective of what happens between Arsenal and Leicester, they cannot afford not to take maximum points in this game. But Tottenham will come to the Etihad full of confidence. You know, they've won 6 on the trot. They're the informed team at the moment. You know, they've quietly sort of crept up to second place. You know, Pochettino's done a fantastic job there. We all know about the young players that he's brought through this season, and you know, they're playing with such confidence and authority that you certainly wouldn't put it past Tottenham to go there and win and really put a huge dent in Manchester City's season.
I know everything is measured nowadays as well with stats and so on and so forth, David, which is a good thing. But I look at this match and I look at the intangibles, the desire that Tottenham might have in the middle of midfield with Eric Dier and Dele Alli going up against Yaya Toure, who looked lacking in that game against Leicester.
That's been a feature this season. He's not been the kind of towering presence and the kind of rampaging midfielder that we saw, you know, score 20-odd goals a couple of seasons ago. He looks disinterested at times. The team are carrying him. And I think it wouldn't be a surprise to me if he didn't play with Toure. I mean, the trouble is he tends not to drop Toure. But it's a real valid question at the moment whether he goes with Fernando and Fernandinho or Fabian Delph in those two holding midfield roles, because Toure just not been up to the task recently. And as you say, with Dele Alli and Eric Dier playing there with a much more youthful energy and exuberance and belligerence in that midfield role, it's going to be a real key area of the game. So it'll be interesting to see what Pellegrini does with Toure. My gut feeling is that he'll go with Toure because he has a lot of faith in him still, misplaced in my opinion, but I think he will go with him. But yeah, City have got to put in a performance. It's interesting, a lot of talk about whether they've been affected by the whole Guardiola situation of the announcement of him coming in in the summer. Of course, they scraped a win at Sunderland, and probably I was another game, but certainly those colleagues of mine who were there said it wasn't really a deserved win, that Sunderland actually could have got something out of the game. And I think Joe Hart made some fantastic saves in that game. So they haven't exactly hit the ground running since that announcement, and it'll be interesting to see whether Sunday follows that pattern.
What's the prediction here, David?
I'm again a tough one, isn't it? I mean, yeah. We talk about City needing a response and Tottenham going there full of confidence. I think if Tottenham can get at City's back four, and if Kane can give Di Michaelis and Otamendi the runaround, and if Eriksen's on form, I see Tottenham winning. I think City's defence, as we said, is vulnerable. I don't think they've got the desire at the moment, or they're certainly not showing the desire at the moment, to be up for the fight. So I'm going to stick my neck out and go for a Tottenham win.
Tottenham 13-5 to win that game. And we've talked about the big four all in, or the top four clubs in the league all in action this weekend, David. Who do you think wins the title?
That's a $1 million question, isn't it? I mean, look, I was one of the many writers who had Leicester going down at the start of the season, so I wouldn't put any store by my predictions. It's a tough one. I think at the moment, you'd have to put your money on Tottenham to do so. They're the team that are really, hit some rich vein of form. They've got that momentum behind them. They're not conceding many goals. There's not really a weakness in that Tottenham team. We talk about City at defence and, Arsenal not having that out-and-out goal scorer. But Leicester, they're great imponderable. The big question with them is can they sort of go over the line, and can they, with the enormity of what they're about to achieve, finally sort of get a hold of them and see them collapse. But with Spurs, I struggle to find a weakness. So I think at the moment, if you'd ask me the likely title winners, I'd say Tottenham. But we know how fortunes can fluctuate. As I say, at the outset, there's still a third of the season to go, 13 games. So a lot can happen in that time, 42 points to play for. But at the moment, your best bet would probably be Tottenham.
9-2 Tottenham are to win the title here with William Hill right now. David, thank you for your company.
Thanks, Dave. I enjoyed it. Cheers.
It's at Disco Mirror. Is there a story there if you want to follow David on Twitter?
There is a story behind it, but probably not for this audience.
At Disco Mirror, if you want to follow David on Twitter, you can follow myself at D Kellner as well. And we'll be back with more football chat on the FWA podcast next weekend. Thank you, folks, for listening.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.